Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My guest today is Victor Sagvalosky, and he is the co-founder and CEO of Lightwater Scientific, the first and only super deuterium depleted light water, where he has dedicated himself to the research, development, and production of this rare water. Victor has researched this and studied the benefits of deuterium depleted water through his theory entitled Androgenous Radiation Damage Theory of Aging. It proposes that our biggest obstacle to longevity is the excess deuterium and other damaging isotopes on the planet and proper mitigation that will radically extend our lifespans. Now, in this conversation, we actually recorded this on site at Biohacking Congress, and Victor was one of the speakers there during that event. And together, we go deeper on how this could potentially help support your sleep results and what that might look like. How are these things related? We get into all that and more on this podcast episode. If you do have any questions, I know this is a big topic of deuterium depleted water, so there are often a lot of remaining questions that do come up. So don't hesitate to reach out to us at sleepisaskill.com, and we're happy to also bring Victor back for further Q&A in the future in various capacities, whether on our newsletter or Instagram or otherwise. So again, I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation and looking forward to your feedback. So without further ado, let's jump into the podcast. All right, you all, I'm so excited to announce our new sponsor, Soul CBD. When I was at my lowest point dealing with my insomnia, CBD was one of the key compounds that I leaned into to combat my crippling anxiety, calm my nervous system, and support my journey to entrain my circadian rhythm. But of all the brands out there, where can you go that you can have a strong trust in their quality? Well, Soul CBD is completely THC-free, organically farmed, gluten-free, and third-party tested for toxins. And bonus, the company is created by a brother and sister duo who have both made wellness their mission in life. And I'm good friends with Angie Lee, their co-founder. So I've seen her commitment to health and sleep behind the scenes, and she really walks her talk. Now, one of the things that is great about Soul is that they aim to help create rituals around your CBD use, and sleep and rituals are best friends. For instance, I love that Soul CBD supports a nighttime bath routine with their CBD bath bombs, which help to combat stress, soothe aching muscles with a mix of CBD essential oils and dead sea salts. Another ritual that we aim to cultivate in the realm of sleep optimization is circadian rhythm intermittent fasting, which is really all about eating your meals between sunrise and sunset. And Soul CBD has very popular gummies that can serve as a nighttime dessert or treat to look forward to without caving to ice cream. Nice alternative. My go-tos personally are their oils, capsules, topicals, and even CBD bath bombs. It's helpful for anyone who struggles with anxiety, pain, or sleep. Now, particularly when I'm traveling, I like to lean into as many things as possible to help with inflammation, and CBD does just that. Now, here's a really cool part. You get 15% off automatically and free shipping when you go to mysoul.com/sleepisaskill. I'm going to say that again. You get 15% off automatically. All you have to do is go to this link, which will be in the show notes, mysoulcbd.com/sleepisaskill. All right, let's get on to the show. Welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. We are very excited to be here recording live from Biohacking Congress in Miami. Lots of great speakers and vendors, and they do have a big Biohacking Congress coming up in Vegas in March. So stay tuned. Even if you can't make it on location, you can get virtual options. But without further ado, Victor, so grateful for you taking the time out of this event to speak with us about
sleep and how it relates to your company, Lightwater.
Thank you.
Thank you. I had the opportunity to watch your speech earlier on today, which was fantastic. So we're going to actually discuss how deuterium depleted water can play a role in some of our goals with sleep optimization. So for anyone that's unfamiliar with anything I just said there, hoping you can help us kind of break it down, the ABCs of deuterium depleted water.
Yeah, I'm hoping I can too.
Okay. it's a big topic, I know. Yeah.
But what it, you want me to start with what deuterium is?
Yeah, if you could. Yeah, because I think for a lot of people, you know, with sleep optimization, we might be discussing nutrition, we might be discussing exercise, some of your habits, all of these components to improve our sleep. But water might be, for many people, the kind of forgotten component.
Of course.
And they might not even know of deuterium and what that
right.
is.
They probably don't.
Yes.
People haven't heard of it
sure.
yet.
They are.
Deuterium is a contaminant. It's a natural contaminant. It's found in all water and food in small amounts that accumulate in our bodies and wreak havoc on our mitochondria.
Yes.
That's the short. The elevator pitch. But how it relates to sleep is when you lower deuterium, you increase metabolism and you optimize your functioning, your health.
Mm.
You know, I postulate my theory, supported by some evidence, is that when humans evolved, we actually evolved to manage a lower level of deuterium, and now our deuterium level is higher. So we just get back down that 20%, you know, down to, from most people are at a level, if you test your saliva, you can probably 150 ppm is the average. Some people are lower because of where they live is lower, but that's the average. Okay, 99% of humans exist in that range. And this is higher than it should be. So we suffer. So now we're aging faster.
Yeah.
You know, we get sicker faster and we lose energy faster because it's really just about energy.
Right?
It's an energy game. Age is just an energy game.
Mm.
So life is just an energy game. If you have it, you can do anything.
If
you don't, the soul is willing, but the body is weak.
Yes, so, and certainly sleep is an energetic process. So to have...
Well, sleep is an energetic restoration process.
Mm-hmm. And the brain is quite active during rest, during certain periods that we might not consider. So we do need that energy capabilities. So I'm curious, how does that all connect on sleep? And why would this be an important part of our stack to improve sleep?
What's interesting is... there's tons of studies on deuterium depletion, what it does, and I never found anything on sleep.
Yeah.
There's not many studies on sleep,
yes.
period. Good ones. Or helpful ones for somebody that's trying to get some benefit for themselves.
Sure.
And not just data, right?
Yeah.
So, but what I noticed, you know, we've been in this business for over 2 years since we've been selling deuterium depleted water in the United States, and I noticed people's testimonials are like, my sleep's improved, I sleep deeper. Some person, inspired me to get this Oura Ring is a customer called me and said, does this improve your sleep? I go, I don't know. I mean, he goes, because since I've been deuterium depleted, my deep sleep is more than it's been the whole time I've been wearing this for the last year. And I started going, well, there is some correlative data to this because you become better at stress management.
Right.
As you deplete your, it's energy, right? The more
sure.
energy you have, the more calmer you can be, you know, because you have that reserve, right?
And that's often a big one for many people that we're working with. Often they might even just be focusing, or one of the things they're focusing on is their heart rate variability from their nocturnal readouts. And so any capabilities to improve that metric in alignment with their ability to tap into that parasympathetic response can be really important for them. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Great call out.
Yeah. So I think there's no studies on it yet, but I think when we do them, I think it'll show that deep sleep is improved. And that's the one that I'm focusing on. Deep sleep or something so profound of it, because you go into a phase conjugate state where you repair in a way that you don't repair any other way.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, and you produce growth hormone.
Yeah.
And so this is important. So the more of it you have, it's great, because most people sleep 7-8 hours a day and they get maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes of deep sleep. So it's like, how do you increase that? How do you go from that light sleep, which is kind of restorative, to that super restorative deep sleep?
Sure.
You know, versus the REM, where you're really just processing, you know, activity and REM sleep is, you know, dreaming part. That's a whole other subject.
Yes.
But the deep sleep is where you recover. It's where everything just goes. And you recover because, you know, if you, what I've noticed is that this is when your heart rate drops, right? Mm-hmm. You just relax.
Yeah.
It's relaxation, right? So, and that means you're like managing stress well because you're just relaxing. And then the HRV increases. Mm-hmm. And so you have, you're just more expansive, you know, it's like a meditator that's able to just elegantly sit there and release all the bonds and all the thoughts in their mind. You know, it's actually when you go into deep sleep, you're going into that meditation for that little period of time. Even though you may not be conscious, it's you're getting the benefit.
Okay. So on this topic, so for people that maybe are in this conversation, they know about deuterium depleted water, but then they say, okay, but how in the world do I get a hold of this? Is it a pricey topic? What does it look like day to day? Can you just have a little bit of it? Is that a benefit? Or does it need to be exclusively your water source? Are there ways we can make our own? You know, the whole world of it. What does that look like?
Well, first of all, it's important to understand that the water is just a tool for you to lower your deuterium depletion level, through deuterium levels. Okay? It's a tool, it's a catalyst to lower your deuterium levels. And as long as you keep drinking it, you'll keep them low. But everything keeps bringing them back up, all our food, anything else. So it's a kind of a balancing act. And the original studies in Russia showed that even drinking deuterium depleted water for a week had a benefit of, you know, 4 weeks. So there is lingering benefit even if you stop. But primarily the protocol is, what we sell is we make like essentially a concentrate because we remove 94% to 97% of the deuterium in the water. Hmm. It's a very expensive process.
Yes.
So it makes that bottle of water expensive. But it's not, you don't have to drink it straight. In fact, if you drink it straight, it's the same benefit as if you dilute it. Because the goal is to just get down by like, you know, 20% of your deuterium and stay there and maintain there. So you can dilute it. You can dilute it with regular water outside or inside your body.
Okay.
Just imagine, you know, we're a big bucket of water and whatever you add into it, at the end of the day, you got to see if you had less deuterium than yesterday.
And then
your body will purge some of it. It will reduce some of it through the mechanism of hydrogen exchange. So people buy like if you buy like a liter or 2 liters of water, it's expensive. It's like $40 for 2 liters of water.
Sure.
But you can dilute that to like four times and you get 122 PPM water for about $4. So it's affordable if you plan it right.
Okay.
Do the protocol and dilute the water to get the, as long as you know what your goal is.
Yeah.
And most people's goal is that because they feel it when they get down to 120, you're in a different world physiologically. You just have more energy. You have more ATP energy and you have less stress on the mitochondria and you have less potential for errors and DNA replications. Things like that. So it's just an optimization.
Okay.
It happens.
What about for people that say, oh, I can DIY it, I can make my own deuterium depleted water? Is there any?
I wish you could.
Yeah.
I wish you really could.
It's not.
It's not possible.
It's not possible.
Because you're separating water from water. So no
yeah,
filtration,
so
no
good luck with that.
I mean, you're separating a molecule that's H2O from a molecule that's HDO, which are not, they're not too different, but they're different enough that. So the way we do it is we basically mimic the hydrological cycle in a big 40-foot column. And then this hydrological cycle, there's a slight difference in phase change, boiling point and freezing point between something that's H2O and something that's HDO. And in that, we pull it out slowly, like a little bit at a time. So we have 65 of these 40-foot columns, and they trickle out a little bit of water a day. You know, and it's expensive because the equipment was expensive, but also because the energy that you need to heat and cool, you're mimicking the hydrological cycle of the earth. You're just amplifying it. So that's how we make it. So you can't make it at home.
I wish you could.
Somebody will invent something eventually. We didn't have a light bulb either, and now we do.
Right.
So it will come. But I tried. I remember I was interested in this from 2004, and I read that you can remove deuterium through different freeze-thaw cycles because the, you know, water freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And if it's deuterium, if it has deuterium in it, if it's HDO, it'll freeze at like half a degree or a degree higher. If it's D2O, it'll be a degree, but let's say half a degree with HDO. So I'm like, oh, okay. So the like, well, since that freezes first, I'm going to freeze that little ice layer. I'm going to pull it off. Then I'm going to put it back in the freezer. I'm gonna wait for that another little ice layer to form. I'm going to take that off. I'm going to do it again. If you do it 15 times, you'll get 1 ppm.
Okay. So it's just sort of it's diminishing return.
It's just, you're better. You know what? You're better off taking a road trip to some place where the water has less deuterium, like, like Boulder, Colorado, or Wyoming, you know?
Well, that brings me to my other question then. So of course you've created light water. So hopefully we're beginning to stock ourselves with this type of water. And so this becomes our main source. What, or how do you navigate on those times when you might, or maybe you always have access to light water? I'm not sure, but
no, you don't. There's access. There's times you don't, you know,
right. You're in the airport or whatever.
Is there
any way to navigate? I mean, I've got some unknown source of water right now.
I fast a lot. So I'm into that, and I'm into like ketogenic or keto adapted diet mostly. Mm-hmm. And I'm into real fasting, like dry fasting, and I'm into intermittent fast. Well, the intermittent fasting is just natural. After you dry fast, you wake up, you don't have any interest in eating, and then you go through the whole day with no interest.
Yeah, kind of all works. And
unless you're really tearing yourself down, then obviously you need to rebuild.
And for people that aren't familiar, fasting and the ketogenic diet can be helpful in this conversation around deuterium.
The reason it's helpful is because the goal of ketogenic diet and the goal of fasting is deuterium depletion, even though people may not realize that. Because when you burn 2.4 pounds of fat in your body, you produce 1 liter of metabolic water. The metabolic water inside our cells is already 60 to 70% deuterium depleted. So that's a little clue. The body wants deuterium depleted water because the water inside our cells that our body makes is 60 to 70% depleted from the bulk water that we drink. Mm. So the thing is just, I think humans eat way too much food, and that's deuterium loading right there.
Sure. And
3, 4, 5 meals a day. It's insanity.
It's a lot.
So that loads you up constantly.
Absolutely. So back to the kind of like in these situations.
Okay. So in this situation, if I don't have any deuterium depleted water, I'm not going to sweat.
You're on the go.
I'm not going to sweat it. I know my levels are slightly creeping up.
Okay.
And when I get home, I'll just drink more than I normally do.
Okay. So will you abstain from any other water sources as much as possible? Or are there kinds that you're like, okay, if I'm in a situation.
It depends on my mood.
Okay. Okay. If you're in that mood where you say, all right, fine, I'm depleted, I need to have something, would you go, are there like spring waters that you would go for or anything? Or
I would always choose a spring water that's from a glacial source because I know that's going to be lower in deuterium.
Sure.
And it's going to have some life force in it. You know, there's something quite special about spring water. In fact, quick anecdote, there was a water researcher, Victor Schauberger. Have you ever heard of him?
He was
kind of a father of water science. Mm-hmm. He was an Austrian naturalist, and he just observed water, you know, as a naturalist. And from that, I mean, he built a flying saucer using the principles of water vortexes. Mm. Anyway, he conducted a very interesting experiment one time. And he took a liter of water, of tap water, regular municipal water.
Yeah.
I think this was in the 40s. And he had the same liter of spring water. And he stood on a scale, to weigh himself. Well, when you drink the tap water, a liter is a kilo. Mm-hmm. So you could see the scale change by a kilo, right? When he drank the spring water, there was no weight change.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
How do you explain that? It just goes poof, you know, it just, who knows?
Interesting.
You know, little stories like that make you think. You know, that make you realize that there's more to this than we know. And so I observe many people that drink water like all day long and then they're chronically dehydrated. Why? Because it's the wrong water.
Yeah. Okay. So if people aren't explored so many areas of maybe biohacking, you know, they're trying all these different things, and this might be part of the untapped, no pun intended, it's a place that they could begin.
It's going to optimize your entire functioning when you lower your deuterium.
Yeah.
So in that, your sleep will improve. Mm. Now, it's not, there's other sleep hacks that are, that I think, are way overlooked, like breathing, like mouth breathing. I look at that and hypocapnia. You know, mm-hmm. I look at people that wake up with hypocapnia because mm-hmm. of their mouth breathing, and that right there destroy their sleep and their health so quickly. And it's not even food you're putting in your body. It's not a toxin. It's just how you breathe.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Oh, there's so many. And so for people, if we're looking to make this kind of like water 101, how about for any biohackers listening that might have seen vortexing your water, red light to your water, any validity to that? What are your thoughts on?
I think there is some validity to that.
Okay. Yeah.
There's water likes to be energized. Mm. It wants to move. You know, water doesn't like to be still.
Yeah.
You know, if you look in ancient times when they find the shipwrecks, you see that people store their water in amphoras. You know what an amphora is?
No,
it's like an egg. It's a shape of an egg.
Okay.
So water should be, they stored water in the shape of an egg, so it wouldn't have any angles, so the water can circulate constantly.
Oh,
water doesn't like to be still. It wants to move because it wants to absorb the energies of what is around it. Okay. Positive energies.
Huh. And so there's different products on the market where you can vortex. Do you think that that's something that people could consider?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I think vortexing is beneficial. You know, it's like, do you like to dance?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's the water in your body likes to dance.
Okay. Very nice. Very cool. Okay. So some of those things could be solid practices. What about for people that say, again, you know, when you're in that crunch or you're on the go and you don't have access, that the temperature of the water can be important, getting super as cold as possible, or that other people that say that room temperature or warm, any call outs for that as it relates to deuterium?
I used to tell people my Native American name was lukewarm water.
Really?
It's just a joke. But it's
okay,
it's
like, I like that joke. All right, say more about that.
Hi, lukewarm water. well, water is densest at 39 degrees, right?
Okay.
4 degrees Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the people that say, oh, well, drink at 4 degrees because it's the most crystalline structure.
Sure.
And see, that's where it's like a closest crystal. And then, I drink tea. I'm Russian. I like tea.
Yes.
So, but room temperature water is always the safe bet.
Mm.
Because you're drinking cold water and your body has to do something to it, you know?
Right.
It's So I think it's a balancing act, you know.
Okay.
If you're hypothermic, cold water balance you out, you know. It's like, but if you're running a little cold and you drink cold water, it can also just tweak you a little bit negatively.
Sure.
So I think lukewarm water is always safe. I think cold water is good now and then. And remember, if you drink cold water, you should at least just keep it in your, make it a little lukewarm in your mouth because you don't want to swallow it like that because it's just aggressive, you know.
Yes.
It's like jumping in a cold pool, you know. It's like, oh.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So it's fine, but it's just whatever makes you happy and comfortable.
Sure.
But I like tea and I like to put fats in my tea. Get my fat that way too.
Oh, right, and the ketogenic diet. Are there other things that people might not consider that could also improve deuterium? So we've mentioned fasting, the ketogenic diet, and certainly your water source. Anything else that we might be missing, or supplements or anything?
Red light therapy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's good because it stimulates mitochondria.
And then the portion or that question.
Sun exposure.
About, certainly. Yes, you know. Absolutely. And red light to the water, you know, people have these
stacks.
Of course to ourselves. But and so when you've seen people do vortexing, deuterium depleted water with the red lights, is that worthwhile stuff?
I mean, it's energy, right? I guess the question is, can the water A, absorb the energy, and two, can it give it to you?
Mm.
And if the answer is yes, then go for it.
Okay, got it. Interesting. And then as far as this focus on sleep, now, certainly to prepare ourselves for sleep, often we want to make sure that we're properly hydrated with a nice buffer time so that we're not disrupting our sleep-wake cycle and, you know, having to get up, go to the bathroom all the time. But if people are being cognizant of, okay, even from a financial standpoint, they're starting to bring in light water, maybe they're not having it for every single time they're drinking water, but they're starting to bring it in, do you see benefits to having that certainly before sleep, or, you know, is it kind of an equalizing act throughout the course of the day?
It's hard for me to say because I just drink water when I'm thirsty.
Yes.
So except for my morning tea, you know, that's like a ritual. But yeah, I just drink when I'm thirsty. And so it's hard to say. But I noticed that this is nothing new or a big revelation. But if you eat right before you go to sleep, you know, or if you consume whatever you consume before you sleep, that's going to affect your sleep.
Sure.
You know? So it's best to just do nothing for an hour or two before sleep. Now, yeah, it doesn't always happen, but right, you can see it the next day that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any call outs about kind of electrolyte sources for the water? So people
often put in like I'm a big believer in Kenton. I'm a big believer in Kenton.
Okay.
Kenton.
Perfect. Minerals. Yeah. I've been using Kenton. That actually. Yeah. I didn't bring it on the flight because I was concerned about the glass breaking, but
I always break one vial.
So do you?
Somehow always one gets
broken.
They also have the sachets. You know.
Oh yeah, I need
but to there's start. Something about that double tint ampoule, you know, it's like,
yes,
it's like jewelry.
Yes. Oh yeah, it's an experience.
Yeah, it's an experience.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, so you always travel with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's so like if you look at it, it looks like it's just like the blood.
Mm.
It's like replacing the blood. It's like almost identical in a mineral profile.
Sure.
It's like a periodic table of elements mm-hmm. in a little vial that's similar to the periodic table of elements in your blood. René Quinton. He said, he said, in order for life that was started in the ocean, mm-hmm. in order for that life to survive on land, it had to bring the ocean with it.
Mm.
That ocean is our blood. And so this Kenton marine mineral matrix,
sure,
this is the closest thing to our blood. In fact, you could transfuse yourself with it and survive. It saved a lot of people in two world wars. But what's extra special about the Kenton is that it's an organic complex of the periodic table. It's not elements, it's minerals.
Mm.
Because it's digested through a vortex phytoplankton bloom.
Yeah, sure. It's
really profound. And then
So then which is great because we often suggest for people to do that certainly both when they first wake up after, you know, the process of sleep can be quite dehydrating. So when we're first waking up to replenish with that, and then often if possible before bed with enough of that buffer time to your point. And there have been concern about impurity for, you know, lead contamination for things like trace minerals and what have you, where we don't have to worry about that as much with the seawater sourcing.
No, the seawater is perfect. I mean,
yeah,
if you see how they do it, it's pharmaceutical grade. In fact,
sure,
I mean, it's in the it's in the French pharmacopoeia as a drug,
yeah,
you know, or it was.
Sure.
But yeah, no, they have all the certifications. They do all the testing. It's safe, you know.
That's great.
It's safe.
And what would your protocol be for the average person for how often should they take that throughout the course of the day? Does that often get added into their water or just, you know, once or twice?
You could add it to your water or you could not do it mm-hmm. separately. Like our water, okay, we don't re-add minerals to it.
Sure.
Our water is lab grade. It's 2 megaohms of resistance.
Okay.
But our water, it's a little odd and I can't explain it myself because our water is technically distilled and deuterium depleted because we have to clean it of everything even before we take deuterium out. So
sure,
we have to homogenize all the water to be just water and HDO.
Yeah.
And so remove everything. And we keep that throughout bottling. We don't add any minerals. So we have pure water. Like you can't even test the pH of it because there's nothing in it to test. There's no mineral in it. There's nothing in there. No ions in there that will give you a reading. So we'll say, oh, this tested 8, this tested 4. I'm like, you can't test it. It's just going to go, there's no way to test the pH of this. It's 7. Okay. And what I can't explain is it tastes good because distilled water does not.
Yes, definitely.
And this one does. So maybe it's because it has less deuterium. I don't know, but it's cool.
Okay. So definitely explore for yourself.
So explore for yourself. You can re-add the minerals. You can
minerals
are the taste. And that's why I like different spring waters because it's the taste.
Sure.
If you have a subtle palate for water, then you'll appreciate the taste of different waters. And that taste is based on the mineralization, the bicarbonate amount, and the minerals that are in there. So yeah, that's a...
Very cool. Well, then to that point, I think an exciting thing that I'd imagine people want to know is we ask everyone that comes on the podcast 3 things about themselves that they are doing to support their sleep. And certainly, you know, yours might be water infused. But the first question that we ask is actually around what your nightly sleep routine looks like right now.
It's erratic.
With all this travel.
My deuterium levels are low.
Mm.
I can manage stress so well.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not, I can sleep one day, I can get a full night's rest. Next day I can get like 3 hours and I'm totally fine. It doesn't bother me at all. So, but for me, what I look at is what's important to me is how quickly do I go to sleep?
Okay.
How quickly do I fall asleep?
Yeah.
And how quickly do I wake up?
Mm.
That's what I look at.
Okay.
Because if I wake up and I'm like, then I know something's wrong.
Yeah.
But if I wake up and I'm like, because like an animal, you know, they're like fully relaxed. And you go, come on, boy. They go, they're like, oh, you know, they went from sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Instant. And that's how we're supposed to be. Mm. And the kids are too. Hey, time to wake up. You're up.
Versus so if groggy, it's like,
yeah, it's a great,
slow.
Then there's a problem somewhere. There's
yeah.
A problem. That's what I look at.
Sure.
So if I can get a full night's sleep, 7-8 hours, I love it. But what I'm tracking is deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I got this Oura Ring, because I want to measure, you know, how much deep sleep I'm getting. And even like last week, I saw that I slept. There was one night I slept 3.5 hours.
Mm,
and 1 hour and 15 minutes of that was deep sleep.
Yeah.
Wow. You know.
Yeah.
And then you know, there's this other technique that Salvador Dali used to use for sleep. Do you know about it?
No, please tell.
So he believed in he got a lot of his creativity in that kind of half wake, half dream state.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Bardo state.
Yeah.
Career. And what he would do is he would take 2 second naps.
Oh, interesting.
And he would have a coin or something, and so he'd fall asleep and then he'd just relax, drop it, go wake up. And that was like something that he, you know, talked about.
Yeah.
And I picked up on that. I go, oh, that's interesting. Because,
that, like how yeah. long the sleep latency. Yeah.
yeah
drop
yeah.
the metal spoon or the what have you.
Yep. Right. So that stuff like that's interesting, you know, like how quickly you can just not out when you're tired, you know?
Yeah, it's such a tricky topic because sometimes if we're falling asleep too quickly, that can be a sign of sleep deprivation. But then if it's taking too long, then that can be something else entirely.
Right, like so going to sleep like super tired and sleepy, right?
Yes.
Like you're just...
Yeah, totally. Okay, yeah. So you're looking at those elements.
I'm looking at that.
So in your nightly routine, are there things that you're bringing in to either, to your point, it's impacted by the deuterium levels that you're currently operating at. Are there things that you might do if you're like, ugh, I've been a little run down, it's likely higher. So to help bring yourself down into that parasympathetic response or any practices that you have?
I noticed that like if a nap is coming on, like if your nap is coming on, don't resist it. Because you wake up refreshed after it's done. After,
sure.
You know, interesting, humans never slept like 8 hours, like continuously. Like if you look at history, even 200 years ago, people went to bed, like, you know, sun goes down,
you didn't
have much light, you know.
Yeah, not much to
not
do.
Blue, no blue light.
Sure.
You went to sleep, you woke up at maybe midnight.
Mm-hmm.
You did something for 2-3 hours and you went to sleep again.
Yeah, that second sleep theory.
Yeah, sure. And you know what? When I get into this kind of natural phase where I'm like, not instead of preparing myself for sleep, where I just like, okay, I got to take a, it's like late, but I'll take a nap, you know, it'll be like 9 p.m. I'll wake up at midnight.
Yeah.
I'll stay up for a few hours and I'll go back to sleep.
Yeah.
And then I'll wake up again at 7 and I'll be fully refreshed. So there's so much we don't know, but what we do know is the blue light is a killer.
Yes. So do you have practices for that to mitigate that? Or
I think the best thing to do is to sleep in complete darkness.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
Right now I haven't done it in my bedroom, but in my previous place I had everything completely blacked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That way, I don't know how long I'm sleeping. I don't know what time it is.
Yes.
I'm just going to let the body do what it needs to do. I'm just going to put myself in a sensory deprivation environment and see what happens. And that is incredible.
Absolutely.
And so it's best to sleep in complete darkness. We're here at this conference. Everybody's at a hotel unless you live here, right?
Yeah, sure.
The room, there's so much light in the room.
Yes.
There's like this little thing going off and that little thing going off. It's like how do you survive? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if I was here for more than a few days, I would probably put black tape over that.
Yes.
Because that's...
I packed that. Yeah, for sure. Yes. I totally feel that.
So the other thing is temperature. You know?
Yep. Okay, so you're always cognizant of that. And how about the wind down for, like, before getting into that hopefully dark, you know, sensory deprivation room? Are there things that you're doing to kind of ensure that you're mitigating faux light in your environment as well?
I try.
Yeah, I think that's what we're all doing. Yeah.
I try. I concentrate on the breath.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing will get you in the parasympathetic faster than
the breath.
Than the right breath.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of people wearing the LEIF. I don't know if you've seen that, LIEF. It's a continuous HRV tracker throughout the course of the day. And then it will buzz you when you're going into a bit more of that stress state to adjust your breathing and start to train. Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, I can. I do have the ability to modulate that stress response. So
Absolutely. It's
a very good point. Okay, so that's currently the snapshot of your evening routine.
Yeah. I think the other thing is your sleep position is another thing to consider.
Sure.
Know? I try to sleep on my back as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I usually end up rolling over, but I try to just maintain proper posture so you don't wake up all discombobulated and contorted.
Yes. You know? And then do you mouth tape at all or?
No, I can breathe through my nose quite well.
Great.
Many years of yoga, so it's just.
That'll do it, sure.
That's fine for me. And so the other thing is just you should get into a state before sleep where you don't have any stress. So you could do like a Savasana meditation, really good, where you tense everything and then release, tense, release, do that a number of times, and then you get into that relaxation. Because otherwise that tension is going to cause you to like move and flail about
those restless sleepers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
And if I don't do that, I can potentially have restless sleep.
Yeah.
So just release the tension however you can. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know?
And how about the fasting that you partake in? Are you mindful of the meal timing to lead up to sleep, or do you have a bit of a structure?
I try to not eat before I go to sleep. I try to maybe 1 hour, 2 hours. You know, it's like I have noticed that a little bit of, and this is Ayurvedic remedy. I like raw milk, and I warm it a little bit, and sometimes I drink that before sleep. It's just so mellow.
Yes, back to that warm temperature and liquid.
Dream of Holstein cows jumping over clouds.
Amazing. All right. Get that REM locked in.
Yeah.
Okay. So then our second question for people is to just understand a bit of a visual, like when we think of your nightstand, what might we see, or it could be as you're traveling, kind of proverbial nightstand, or any apps or ambiance or supplements or anything that would be helpful for us to know about for sleep optimization?
My nightstand is pretty empty.
Okay, sometimes that can be the key.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I like just the peace of mind
of
that. But I've never had a problem with sleep. I can fall asleep on a train sitting up.
Yeah.
So I've never had that issue.
Right.
My issue has been consistency.
Yeah.
Because of travel and just moving around, it's like my body doesn't know where it is.
Yes.
Sometimes, you know, what time zone it is. So my circadian rhythm is like all over the place. But I think that also creates a hormetic effect.
Mm.
That first started when I was working in Hollywood in the camera department. You have to be the first one there and the last one to leave. So you don't, you know, and you're constantly moving around, traveling, all this. So I learned that if I don't, you know, this, I got to make it work for me.
Yeah.
So that's when I learned, hey, get it wherever you can. If you can't, you know, if you get it, you know, they say, oh, napping, there was like, napping is bad. I don't believe napping is bad at all.
Mm.
I think if your body's ready to shut down, what are you going to do? Go, no.
Yeah, right.
Just let it happen, you know?
Yeah, and often we can find a happy medium with napping. You know, some groups that are struggling with insomnia, and they might have a whole protocol that they're working through, or possibly sleep restriction, that could be a period of their life where they're retraining that sleep pressure. But to your point, often, especially if we do have kind of healthy relationships and workability with our sleep, then it can be really a great practice.
If you can get an hour or two massage before sleep,
that
will do wonders.
Definitely.
That will
do great wonders.
Like I go to a Russian Russian banyas, you know, and there, you know, you go to the sauna, and then you jump in the cold plunge, and you do that number of times.
Yes.
And then you drink hot tea, you wrap yourself in towels, and you just go away.
Mm.
And then when you wake up, you feel like a little baby.
Well, that is amazing. I haven't heard it described that way, and I like it. Okay, so then the last question is, what has been sort of your biggest aha moment or made the biggest change to your sleep game? And I know what you shared too, that for you, you haven't necessarily struggled with your sleep, which we can learn a lot about people that are actively sleeping well.
Between my early 20s and early 40s, I slept on the floor.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I couldn't sleep in a bed.
Interesting.
I had to have a hard, I've always thought of like, I was imagining my perfect bed would be a marble slab with a wooden block. You know how they have the Koreans have the little wooden blocks and that's their pillow.
Sure.
So I couldn't sleep in a bed because what the floor does is it forces you to relax.
Mm.
You have to let go. You have to release.
Yes. Interesting.
You can't hold it. But the bed, you know, if it's the wrong bed, finally I found there's coming out with some very good mattresses.
Mm.
But if it's soft, you stay tense.
I see.
Because but if you're on the hard surface, you can release.
Mm.
You have to.
Yeah, interesting.
It's just more comfortable that way. So I just slept on the floor for
a long
time. And I slept on a floor without a pillow.
Really?
I mean, I finally got those those little
kind of nesting option. Okay, so then what had you start to shift from the floor to now you have a more traditional setup for your bed?
Well, it's great for a single life. Yes. No girlfriend will ever sleep on the floor with you.
Got it. Okay. So you had to sort of adjust to the rest of the society. Sure.
Exactly.
Okay. So then was there a particular mattress that you found, or do you try to lean towards the hard, firm?
With no spring, no coils.
Okay. Very cool.
I think the coils conduct. I mean, they're like, they're coils. They can modulate frequencies.
Sure.
You know? Like, where I also read that where your head should be pointed, mm-hmm. it should be either be pointed east or north, magnetic north. So you're in alignment.
Okay.
East, because that's where the sun comes up. And you're like, I'm ready. I'm waiting for that thing to go. And or north for that magnetic alignment.
Okay.
So I learned that early on in life, and I've always tried to arrange my bed that way, either north or east. And I don't know. I still don't know which one's better. So.
Okay, so playing with that. Got it. That's amazing. So then for people that are hearing what you're sharing, curious to learn, because I know we only tapped into a little bit about deuterium depleted water. I know you gave a fantastic presentation there's so much to this topic.
So if
people want to learn more about you, about light water, et cetera, where can they go? What can they do?
They can go to drinklightwater, LITEWATER.com. They can go to deuteriumtest.com for the testing. They can go to deuteriumdepletion.org, where all the studies are located. Probably more than 60 of them on that website now. They can go to Deuterium Depletion Summit. We already had one last year. We'll have another one next year with the world's top scientists in deuteronomics. And our Instagram.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty easy to contact through those channels if you want to get a hold of me.
And real quick about the testing, what exactly does that look like? If anyone's saying like, well, where am I at? And if I start bringing this in, can I test again? How do they do that?
Right. So you can test before and after if you want a baseline.
Sure.
Before, you can pretty much guess where you're at before if you want to save yourself some money and not get that baseline, because you're going to be about what the water is you're drinking is wherever you live. And but if you're really like, you know, if you're really like a biohacker, you might want to know the baseline before and after. And then I would test after 3 months. And it's just a little kit that you collect saliva with and just send it in. 10 days or so, we'll give you your result.
Okay, so we could go to that site, order
Learn
the test,
about it, yeah.
and then it comes to us, we do the saliva, we send it back, mm-hmm. and then we get that kind of readout. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, very cool. That could be a great place for people to see that measurable difference.
Right.
Empowering.
I mean, you know, you're spending the money, you're doing the work, you know, even though it's the work, it's just drinking water.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure it is working.
So right.
You want to be validated that you're in that you've achieved that optimal deuterium depletion level, which is in the 120 range.
Okay.
Now, it gets better if you go below that. But the 90%, the bulk of the benefit is in that first 30 ppm of depletion.
Have you ever seen people with surprising levels, like surprisingly high, surprisingly low? Any insights you've seen?
Yes. So I've noticed that if you are exactly the water that you drink, then, you know, it's just what it is. You're maybe healthy, maybe not. But I noticed that some people, they test lower than the water they drink, which means their metabolic health is primo, just excellent, you know, because they're able to deplete
even in the face of
their deuterium depletion mechanisms are working really well.
Yeah,
you know, in their mitochondria. Now, if it's the opposite, your deuterium levels are higher. Like if you're testing, like if your water, you're drinking 150 and you're testing at one. Now, nobody ever tests above 157. I don't think. Maybe there's somebody 160. I'd be very scared for them. So if you test above what it is, then you have a problem. You're not managing, and that's usually because you're just consume way too much carbs and they're loaded with deuterium.
Okay.
You know, so you're just loading yourself up. So saliva is a pretty good indicator of what's happening inside the body. You know,
but
you can go deeper and test other fluids and try to build like a correlation. But you don't need to go that exact.
Right.
You just need to know,
the ballpark.
I'm there because I feel like I'm there. You know, and you just want to validate that.
And then
just maintain that.
Yeah.
And everything starts. The longer you do it, the better it gets, because a little bit of energy for a long time is better and a little bit of energy for a short time.
Yes, that consistency thing.
Consistency.
Well, so enlightening. Thank you so much for taking the time to share this. I know.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate absolutely. Yeah. And I know you're working on optimizing for your sleep and taking a look at some of the effects of the fact that you're so attuned to this deuterium depletion process and what you're bringing into your body. So be very curious. Keep us posted on what you're discovering with the Oura Ring and beyond. So, but really appreciate again taking the time.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.